Hello and welcome to Comment with me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh, standing in for George Galloway once more this week. George is still busy on the campaign trail trying to get re-elected as MP for Bradford West next Thursday. Anyway, in George's absence, we'll be asking two questions today. Which British political party agrees with you and why? And how should Saudi Arabia be punished for killing Yemeni children? Earlier on Road to Westminster, I was discussing the British general election, which will take place in 1 week's time on Thursday, May the 7th. As polling day approaches, the traditional parties, Conservatives and Labour, seem to be less and less popular with their foreign wars and their economic austerity measures at home. But can the smaller parties offer us an alternative? The Scottish Nationalists look set to be the story of this election. They'll probably become the third largest party in Parliament, and they could be kingmakers in the next coalition government. Now, according to the United Nations, since Saudi Arabia started bombing Yemen over a month ago, over 1,000 people have been killed and thousands more have been injured, including nearly 150 children. Moreover, a humanitarian catastrophe is taking place with 300,000 people displaced from their homes and 12 million short of food. Yet the voices of condemnation from the so-called international community are conspicuous by their silence. In fact, they're aiding and abetting Saudi war crimes. You can call me on +44 208 601 4555 to share your views. You can also SMS me on +44 78 00 00 80 66, and you can email me on comment@presstv.co.uk. And I promise we'll prioritize your views or calls if you disagree with what I'm saying. Now, just a few brief words on our main two topics. The right wing Conservative Party and the centre-right Labour Party are both predicted to get around 33% of the vote in next week's British general election, which probably means neither will have enough seats in Parliament to form a government. So they'll have to form a coalition with one of the smaller parties, the Scottish National Party perhaps, the Liberal Democrats, or the anti-immigration, anti-European Union UKIP Party. And that means weeks of boring wrangling to form an administration, which will probably take place after the actual vote. Now, my general feelings are that the wider public is quite apathetic and disenchanted with politicians in this country. Therefore, I expect around 40% of the nation won't vote at all. This has been caused by years of pointless foreign wars and economic austerity at home. And then there's the superficial nature of politics, which rich politicians dominating the scene out of step with the wider public, who basically despise them. But perhaps, just perhaps, the smaller parties, such as the Scottish National Party, will offer British politics some hope. Their leader, Nicola Sturgeon, has certainly been the star of the campaign so far. And their programme, which is staunchly anti-austerity and against Britain's nuclear weapons, is appealing to many voters, even south of the Scottish border. And if they do go into a coalition with one of the major parties, perhaps they could restrain some of their right-wing domestic and foreign policies, or perhaps not. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia continues its devastating air campaign on Yemen, and now there's increasing evidence that the Saudis are playing a more influential role on the ground there. They've been dropping arms to Yemeni tribesmen opposed to the Houthis, and they've also been training them to fight. Of course, they won't send any of their own ground troops, of course, because if they do, well, they're far too cowardly to do that, aren't they? The humanitarian situation on the ground is horrendous, yet the Saudis have imposed an air and naval blockade, preventing aid from getting in. And they continue their propaganda campaign, warning about a fictitious Persian expansion plan and demonizing the Houthis as an Iranian proxy. I'll give the Saudis this. They've always been brilliant at racism and sectarianism, and that's maybe the only aspect of their Yemeni campaign that's actually working. All this bombing, death and destruction and racism and sectarianism is, of course, being overtly and covertly backed by the so-called international community, which is, in fact, four square behind the Saudi bombing campaign. As for the Houthis, they continue their advance into the center of Aden, and despite over a month of bombing, their battlefield position remains pretty strong. Now, I've consistently said that what Yemen needs isn't more war. It's a political solution whereby all the local factions hammer out a power-sharing deal and learn to live with each other. And unless that happens, the only winners from this disastrous situation will be the fanatics of Al-Qaeda, who are already making advances in the south of the country. Okay, I'm going to stop talking now, hopefully, for the time being. And without further ado, I hope to say take some of your calls. I'm going to drink some water because my voice is going hoarse. And I think we have somebody on the line already, John from the UK. John, please go ahead and make your point.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hello. Yes, I'm John. I am the coordinator of Football Against Apartheid, which shows my hand almost straight away. But it's better to make that declaration.
Sorry, John, I didn't hear you. The coordinator for what?
Sorry?
The coordinator for what?
I'm the coordinator of Football Against Apartheid.
Football Against Apartheid. Wonderful.
Yes. And I think that gives my hand away immediately. But that is better that I'm honest and fair and above board of what my interests are. I'm totally opposed to apartheid in Israel, as I was opposed to apartheid in South Africa. I campaigned successfully against against apartheid in South Africa, and we saw that off. But the first thing we did, of course, was we were able to convince FIFA to expel apartheid South Africa from football, and that happened in 76. And from then on, it was all downhill for apartheid in South Africa. And we think we can achieve the same thing in Israel. Now, for me, this election is a dilemma because all three major parties are all pro-Zionist.
Mm.
And yeah. That is a dilemma for everybody in my group and my concerns and so on, except for the minor parties. And the minor parties are very good, in fact. The Scottish National Party are saying that they would like to establish a Palestinian consulate in Edinburgh,
yeah.
And that's very good. The TUSC, Trade Union and Socialist Coalition, are saying they're seeking justice for Palestinians. Respect Party, of course, will want to recognise a Palestinian state as a single unified democratic state.
So, John, if I can just interrupt you really briefly. Yep. So, basically, we're talking about the UK elections. So, if you care about Palestine, if you care about the Middle East and you're anti-Israeli, you're anti-Zionist, you're anti-apartheid Israel, you're saying that you shouldn't vote for any of the major parties. It's more the smaller parties, maybe like the SNP or the Greens or Respect that you should vote for?
Well, yes, I think we've got to sort of really think carefully about it, the same way as we've got to think very, very carefully about how we're going to get rid of apartheid in Israel. And, for example, if I was Scottish, then I think we would have to, say, support the Scottish Nationalist Party and put Nicola Sturgeon into power, get that consulate erected in Edinburgh, and get the Palestinian state recognised in Scotland. So that if Scotland does find itself in a free state, it will be the first country in the world with a free
And obviously, John,
the,
you know, voters in England and Wales can't vote for the Scottish National Party. So who should they vote for?
Directly to the Scottish electorate there. TUSC is a different kettle of fish because it is fighting a lot of seats. But again, in my particular seat in Hampstead, then the TUSC is standing, but they've got very little chance of winning.
Mm.
And that's a three-corner
it's like
seat.
A waste of the vote.
But the Tories, Labour and Liberals all vying for the same seat have a very good chance of getting it. So presumably a vote there for TUSC will probably put either the Tories or the Liberals into power.
Sure.
So we've got to vote for Labour there on the basis that it will help us save the National Health Service and probably less warmongering perhaps than the others.
Thank you, John. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off because I want to get as many calls as possible in. But John there saying, if you're in Scotland and you care about Palestine, vote for the Scottish National Party. Alex Salmond, their leader, called for an arms embargo on Israel when it was bombing Gaza last year, and that's more guts than any other British politician had at the time to call for such a move. And he's saying, if you're in England, you know, perhaps vote tactically, or don't vote for the traditional parties like Labour or Conservatives or Liberal Democrats, because they're all pro-Zionist and they're all in a hock to the Zionist lobby. Khurram is in Islamabad and in Pakistan. And Khurram would like to talk about Saudi Arabia. And the question we're asking tonight is, should Saudi Arabia be punished for effectively killing Yemeni children? Khurram, go ahead and make your point, please.
Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
I'm very honored to speak in your in a very nice TV show.
Thanks for calling.
My opinion is that basically Saudi Arabia is basically... should realize that it has got a big respect among all the Muslims because of being custodian of the holy mosques. But unfortunately, the Saudi leadership is very, very narrow-minded and following its very limited Wahhabi sect and does not consider all the other sects as, you know, part of the big Muslim ummah. Mm. And this is very, very sad. Also, we should understand why at this time this the new Saudi king has started this fight in Yemen. In my opinion, there is a rift in the royal family, and this Saudi king just wanted to divert the attention towards something else, something bigger, so that the internal strife or internal discontent is, you know, diverted to something else.
Yeah.
And this may be the reason why all of a sudden they started, you know, attacking the Yemeni people.
Really?
And killing innocent children and women. So all the Muslim world should condemn and should join together and tell the Saudis as well as their partners that this is wrong. Don't kill the Muslims for the sake of your... Yes.
Khurram, thanks a lot for you know calling in and making those very interesting points. Yeah, custodian of the two holy mosques, that's what they call themselves. They even called the whole country after themselves. I mean, I don't like saying Saudi Arabia. It's Arabia, right? Not Saudi Arabia. You don't name the country after a family who ultimately only came there, who only got power through British machinations, and then sustain themselves through an alliance with the United States of America, the great Satan, and then also sustained by petrodollars. As far as imposing their version of Islam on the rest of humanity, their version of Islam ultimately, I mean, I don't criticize any sect, but their version of Islam is a minority version, and they've got no right to impose it on everyone else. It's like their way is the highway. That's the height of arrogance. But a very interesting point you make about rifts in the Saudi royal family and perhaps diverting attention away with this war in Yemen. I can't really comment on that. Perhaps other viewers can pick up on it. Ali in Luton, which is a town I know very well, just north of London. And Ali would like to talk about Saudi Arabia as well. Ali, go ahead and make your point.
Yeah. Hi. I like to call it Yahudi Arabia, to be honest with you, because it's just a Zionist state.
All right.
And, you know, I'm not Shia, but I've got no hard feelings against the Shia. Because all the Ummah has had...
I'm not Shia either, and I've got no hard feelings against the Shia.
Yeah. But it's a proxy war against Iran, to sort of create a greater Israel. And I don't think Saudi Arabia should only be punished for killing women and children in Yemen. And mind you, they've quickly got rid of the hadith where they say the best of the people will be from Yemen. Yeah? It's the true Sunni scholars are actually in Yemen. And the ones who were in Syria and Iraq and all over, they've been killed by their little puppet hand ISIS.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just to create a greater Israel. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Saudi Arabia and Israel, I think time will reveal that they're basically in bed with each other. I mean, it might not be open at the moment. And I think, obviously, if Saudi Arabia openly admit they're in bed with Israel and they're following all Israel's plans for the region, which is to completely destroy the whole place, then that would be bad PR for them. But, you know, effectively, you know, they're both human rights abusers. They're both sectarian, racist states. They both go around invading foreign countries and destroying them. I can see the parallels. Ali, I'll just let you get back in before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, Saudi Arabia's destroyed all our heritage, all the Sunni heritage. And, yeah. You know...
Yeah, look, I agree with you 100%. Makkah, you know, which is our holiest city for all Muslims, they're destroying it. You know, they've made the wife of the Prophet's house into like a public toilet or something. They're destroying, you know, Mecca looks like Las Vegas now. This is the holiest city in the Muslim world. Now, I don't deny that, some expansion is needed for the millions of pilgrims that visit Makkah every year, but this should be done through consensus. The Saudi authorities have no right to take unilateral decisions to destroy our holiest city, you know, without consulting with the rest of the Ummah, because Makkah belongs to the whole Ummah. It doesn't belong to the Saudi royal family. Ali, just let you come back in really quickly.
One more point in. I mean, like the brother from Pakistan is saying, oh, the Ummah. You're saying the Ummah, well, when we go to Saudi Arabia, we're treated as second-class citizens. We have to get a visa. We're not welcome. Come on, my brothers, you come into Umrah, you come into Hajj, you come into Baitullah Sharif. Come on, welcome. Yeah? Pakistani national is not allowed to buy land there. He's not allowed to open a business there without the consent of his kafil, which is his master.
And what about...
He's not allowed to marry.
What do you make of their campaign in Yemen, specifically, Ali?
Well, it's a proxy war against Iran, to be honest. Yeah, and it's to get rid of the true Sunni scholars.
What do you mean the true Sunni scholars? I don't understand that. What do you mean the true Sunni scholars in Yemen?
The proper, the who are from Ahl Sunnah, not the Wahhabi.
All right.
Doctrine.
So you mean they want to kind of impose their Wahhabi ideology over Yemen, which is obviously quite a pluralistic society. Thank you very much, Ali. I've been to Yemen, by the way, and I can tell you that the sectarian differences there really are not marked at all. You can't really tell the difference between Sunnis and Zaydis and Shias and whatever. And they all get along absolutely fine. It's only the Saudi last kind of 20, 30 years, the Saudis have been deliberately pumping in their money and sponsoring certain groups in that country in an attempt to sectarianize the situation, which didn't have those sectarian ingredients. Raza is in London, and Raza would like to talk about UK politics now, about the general election taking place next week. Which British political party agrees with you and why? Raza, go ahead.
Hey, Islam, Roshan. I think the point I'd like to make is that I've seen a lot of Muslims make blanket statements about, you know, oh, we should vote for the Labour Party, or Tories are bad, or Lib Dems are this, etc. And I think Muslims need to really get their heads out of the sand and stop thinking that one party is the angel, the other is the devil. Look, we have to be real. There are some horrible people in all the parties. You know, for example, Labour bought us the Iraq War. They bought us Prevent. They bought us the counter-terrorism measures, which then the Tories have built on. Tories have bought us a counter-terrorism bill, which means you can spy on children. So let's be real as Muslims and realise that actually there's a lot of bad in both the parties. But that means we need to change that. It doesn't mean that we disengage and say, what's the point of voting? No, rather we need to get involved and make sure that we kick out the guys that are bad in all the parties. We need ethical MPs in the Tory party, in the Labour party, and in the Lib Dems party. And I think we should.
So Reza, I should have introduced you, Reza. Of course, you're Reza Nadim from MPAC calling in. Reza, so basically you're saying that Muslims should vote tactically. Is that what you're saying? Support one party on block?
Oh, definitely, Roshan. I think Muslims for far too long, our elder generations have just voted Labour without thinking. And then those Muslims who have made a couple of quid, they vote Tory without thinking. And actually, that's what's actually really harmed our community. What we need is to support the guys that are ethical. So, for example, it's George Galloway is a great example in Bradford West. He is an ethical guy who deserves your vote. You know, you have David Ward in Bradford East. You have the great MPs. I mean, I live in an area where my Labour MP is a hardcore supporter of the Labour Friends of Israel. So for me, it's not about that Labour is bad. It's I need to get this unethical guy out of Labour, and that means voting tactical.
I mean, as Muslims, do we have a tick list? Our communities have a tick list of things, or a wish list rather, of things that we would like to see the next government implement. What are the main issues for us?
Yeah, the thing is, you know what, it's you can't always get, you know, no two human beings on the planet agree, I think, but the key things that every Muslim can agree on, no matter what background you're from, is A, these counter-terrorism policies are, they're not conducive to society and actually fueling Islamophobia and actually alienating the Muslim community, so that's one thing. The second thing is actually fight, kind of, we want our government to take a tougher stance on actual the rising bigotry against us. I mean, just today, for example, Rod Liddell wrote in The Spectator that actually, he said, Islamophobia doesn't exist, I just don't like Islam. Now, that is deeply racist and deeply bigoted comment to make. And then the final thing, really, is that we don't want our government and our country to be involved in foreign wars or propping up dictators. People like Israel and people like Saudi Arabia, like Ali mentioned earlier. I don't want to be supporting Saudi Arabia or Israel in any way. Let those two stay in bed together. We don't need to join them under the duvet.
All right. Reza, I really appreciate you calling in. So Reza making several important points there. If you're a Muslim in this country, basically, obviously we're a very diverse community, but there are a few things that we can agree on when it comes to voting if you do choose to vote. I know a lot of Muslims won't vote at all. One is the counter-terrorism policies that the government is enacting in this country. They're very Islamophobic. They target Muslims. They're spying on mosques. They're spying on businesses. They're going into schools and monitoring the way Muslims behave in universities. They're stopping Muslims at border posts. And they're not just targeting so-called terrorists or those prone to radicalization. It's like anyone with a beard, you know? It's like the community as a whole. And the media is completely Islamophobic. And the political establishment as well. We see headlines targeting Muslims every day. Now, if your local MP doesn't impose that, then perhaps you shouldn't vote for him. And finally, foreign policy, getting involved in stupid, pointless wars that kill, you know, millions of Muslims abroad, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, destabilizing Syria with these, you know, supporting these terrorists out there while pretending to actually be fighting terrorism. You know, these are the policies that I think we can all agree Muslims should be voting on. Fareed is in Canada. Fareed, much appreciated. Thanks for calling in. You'd also like to talk about Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Go ahead, Fareed.
Hello, hi. How are you today?
I'm fine. Alhamdulillah, I'm fine.
I just want to give you the point. When the Saudi Arabia didn't stop in Bahrain and attack Bahrain that time, United Nations didn't do anything, or Arab countries, they didn't do anything, because all of those organizations sold out. I mean, the Saudi Arabia, they have control of those both Muslim leaders and the United Nations. That's why right now attacking innocent people, killing them, and nobody can stop that until the great people, freedom fighters like me, like other people, Muslim people in other countries, they get up and call their government to stop this war first, and after punish the Saudi Arabia, what they're doing to innocent people, killing them, and nobody right now is stopping that, and we are just watching them. 35 days, they're killing people, and they don't have a food, the injured people, and those people is poorest people in the world. Because the government, Saudi Arabia, they put the government for many years, they try to control those people. First, they call them Shias, but this is not about the Shia or Sunni. This is the people of Yemen. And if you see what happened after they trying to killing those people, the government, the army of the Yemen right now, beside the people fighting against Saudi Arabia.
Fareed. I'm going to stop you there. Thanks a lot for your call. You made some very eloquent points. Look, the West is in alliance with Saudi Arabia. They have an alliance with Saudi Arabia and Israel and the other Persian Gulf states like Qatar and whatever and Kuwait. And, you know, they're also in semi-alliance with Turkey. So when Saudi Arabia marches, invades Bahrain, they do nothing about it. In fact, they back it. And the same thing has happened here in Yemen. They have been four square behind the Yemeni bombing campaign. campaign, which is killing thousands of people, according to the UN, injuring thousands of more, 300,000 people displaced from their homes, more atrocities that I haven't got time to mention now. Okay, look, we're going into a short news bulletin now, but before we do that, just a reminder that on today's show, we'll be asking two questions. Which British political party agrees with you and why? And how should Saudi Arabia be punished for killing Yemeni children? You can call me on +44 208 601 4555 to share your views. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you again in a few minutes. Welcome back to Comment. We're taking your calls today on two questions. Which British political party agrees with you and why? And how should Saudi Arabia be punished for killing Yemeni children? Now, I've been arguing that the British election campaign has been pretty boring so far, with the Scottish nationalists the only bright spark. And I've been saying that the world is watching while Saudi Arabia gets away with war crimes in Yemen. Now, without further ado, I'm hoping to take some more of your calls, some excellent calls in the first half of the show. And we have Eric, who is in New York. Thanks for calling, Eric. Go ahead and make your point.
Sure. I just wanted to say that with regard to Saudi Arabia, I think we all understand that Saudi Arabia should be held accountable for war crimes here. There's unequivocal war crimes that have been committed by the Saudis, not the least of which, of course, the deliberate bombing of roads, civilian infrastructure, the airport, schools, the electrical grid. All of these things clearly set out as war crimes by the Geneva Convention and the UN Charter. We also see clearly examples of deliberate targeting of civilians for the purposes of a terror campaign by the Saudi forces in order to be able to create space for Hadi, the puppet government that Saudi Arabia has backed. All of this is true, but I think the broader question is the question of power, because, of course, war crimes and the prosecution of war crimes is entirely dependent upon who is committing them, who has power internationally. If you're talking about Israel vis-a-vis Gaza, or you're talking about Saudi Arabia, both of those cases, you have the United States as the patron behind both of those powers. And so we can see quite clearly that neither one of them will be held accountable in the international Criminal Court or an international justice of any kind.
Eric, how do you see this conflict panning out? Are we heading towards a political solution here at some point after Saudi Arabia has killed 1,000 more children, or can you see this dragging on for months?
Well, the only political solution that's possible is the one that was presented before the bombing campaign even began. Once the Houthis had moved to seize power with their allies of the Saleh faction, they offered the possibility of peace talks with a number of different parties, many of them being their opponents. That's precisely what's going to have to happen. You're going to have a dialogue process that happens. But in the meantime, the Saudis are trying to reinstall their puppet government, a puppet government that is not going to take part in any such dialogue process. And so what's going to happen, sadly, unfortunately, most likely, is a factionalization of Yemen along the lines of the Somalia model. And this is precisely what the United States...
That's what's happening to the whole Arab world, isn't it? That's what's happening to the whole Arab world at the moment. It's being kind of, the Somalia model is being exported, and these power vacuums are being created. And who fills those vacuums? Al-Qaeda, ISIS, ISIL, rather. Eric, one more question to you. What do you make of Saudi Arabia's propaganda about Persian expansion, Safavi expansion across the Middle East?
This is, of course, the pretext. This is the smokescreen that they use to justify their own imperialist agenda. And this is, of course, what they've used countless times with regard to Yemen, what they've used countless times with regard to Syria, with regard to the how they demonize Hezbollah and other factions. This is in order to justify what is clearly unjustifiable aggression on their part and on the part of their allies. Mm. And they need to use Iran as the bogeyman because Iran represents a regional rival, rival for Israeli and Saudi hegemony. They need to see that Iran is made to be the devil in the region precisely so they can further their own politics.
Okay. Eric, really appreciate your call all the way there from in New York. Fantastic points you made. We're going to move on now to Declan, who is in Southampton, which is a city on the south coast of the United Kingdom. Declan wants to talk about Saudi Arabia as well and Yemen, how it should be punished for the war crimes it's committing there. Declan, the airtime is yours. Go ahead, please.
Right. I've just returned from Syria.
Have you?
And I was in Yarmouk camp on the under the protection of the Syrian army. And the crimes that are being committed against the Syrian people, against the people of Yemen and many other countries, are just too horrible to describe. When you speak about punishing Saudi Arabia, it's like Santa Claus or a wish list or something. Number one, as you said yourself, this mafia, criminal mafia family, the Saud family, should really all be in jail and should not be running a country, never mind have a country called after them. They are rich kids, and with Israel, etc., you know, they just kill children in Gaza, Syria, Yemen, wherever they feel like it when they're not on their Xboxes. Now, today in 1975, Vietnam won the Vietnam War. They beat the Americans. There was a big movement, a worldwide movement against the Americans, which helped the Vietnamese people. One of your earlier speakers spoke about anti-apartheid, where there was a consensus that there was something very wrong with apartheid South Africa. And we're in a situation where these devils in Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other countries can just kill at will, and there's no organized civil resistance to them that I can see, at least. So how to punish them? Well, you know, hell is not hot enough or eternity long enough for them. But the question is, the real question should be, how do we get in a situation where Qatar, that little micro-state, Saudi Arabia and the other countries, the other kings, so-called kings, are held to account, and where they stop ruining the lives of innocent men, women, and children, wherever their filthy hands stick.
I get your point, Declan. You made it very well. Thanks for your call. And I want to stay on Yemen and the UK elections, but just a quick point about Syria. It's very worrying what's happening in Syria. Turkey, Qatar, the West, and Saudi Arabia are effectively in alliance with Al-Qaeda in northern Syria, who are running rampage over that country and are now threatening the Alawite heartland. And who knows what next? So these countries that are making noises about fighting terrorism are supporting terrorists, the worst Takfiri, fanatical, head-chopping, liver-eating terrorists in northern Syria. Wajdi is in London, and Wajdi would like to talk about Saudi Arabia as well. Wajdi, go ahead.
Good evening. Yeah, I just wanted to basically say that your question today is asking how Saudi should be punished for killing Yemeni children. And, well, when we look at the Saudi war against aggression against Yemen, is no different to the Israeli wars against Gaza and the Palestinian people, and the massacring of children both in Gaza and in Yemen by Israel in Gaza and by Saudi in Yemen. Israel got away with it, and the international community won't punish Saudi for what they have done. Because also, if we look at the whole region in general, Saudi is the biggest exporter of terrorism. Now, if the international community is not acting against Saudi for its backing for terrorism, I doubt it's going to be able to. I don't think it's going to act against Saudi for its aggression against Yemen, which was actually given the green light by the US. Mm. If we recall, the war against Yemen was actually announced from Washington by the Saudi
ambassador. Yes.
Yeah,
so what can we do, Wajdi? I mean, obviously we all complain about it on TV shows and in newspaper articles, but practically what can we do? I guess we should be supporting the resistance forces practically in every way we can in that region, right?
Of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, as it has shown with Israel, the only way to face these aggressive regimes and these aggressive entities is by resistance. I don't think politics can do much nowadays, especially due to the fact that the majority actually support the Saudi aggression on Yemen. So the only way that the Yemeni people can avenge the death of their children is through the resistance themselves.
Yes.
On the ground,
100%.
On the ground against the Saudi-backed Al-Qaeda terrorists.
Okay, Wajdi, I'm going to leave your call there because we want to move on. But I agree with what you're saying. And, you know, me personally, you know, we might have issues with certain groups that are fighting the Saudis or the Israelis, whatever. But we have to put those to one side. And we have to look at the big picture. And we have to support those who are actually resisting imperialism and Zionist and Western imperialism and terrorism in those regions. We have to support these groups in any way that we possibly can, small ways or big ways, because they need our help and they're fighting an existential fight at the moment. Because if the Saudis, the Takfiris, if the Qataris and the Turks and all those win, then they're gonna eat us alive. You know, this is an existential fight. Jubin's in London. And Jubin would like to bring it back to the UK, where I am, and talk about the UK election next week. Which British political party agrees with you, Jubin, and why? Go ahead.
Well, I will vote for Labour because they have made it clear that they, as a party, they recognise a Palestinian state.
Okay.
However, my main purpose of making this call is to campaign for freedom of this Iranian woman called Athena Farkadani. She has been
But Jubin, it's not on our topic at all. Have you got anything to say on the question or not?
When I put my name for, being sort of interviewed.
Yeah, but have you got anything to say about the UK, or was this just a fake call? Were you just calling in to make that point, and trying to trick us? Oh, you're not there anymore. Well, that's pathetic, isn't it, Jubin? I mean, you know, come on, just, you know, you can make that point anywhere you want to, in the UK press, on CNN, on BBC. What's the point making it on here when, you know, we're talking about something else? You're just phoning in and trying to trick everybody. Anyway, Amal is in Leicester. And Amal, I'm not sure what you'd like to talk about, Amal, because I haven't been given that information, but go ahead anyway.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
You have to get used to it. You will get it everywhere, people like that, but just leave with love. I like to talk about Saudi Arabia.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, I found it your viewer that they really are waking up today what is happening in Yemen. Saudi Arabia is the country who signed with the Zionists 1948 to give it Palestine. Saudi Arabia is the one who was involved in the breaking regime in the disaster in Somalia. Saudi Arabia was the one involved the problem in the division in Eritrea. Saudi Arabia was involved and paid the price that division what is became South Sudan and Sudan too. Saudi Arabia was the one who let happen the war 33 days in Lebanon, especially South Lebanon. Saudi Arabia problem is not today. Saudi Arabia, the most country what they crippled in the Islamic history is a Muslim Sunni country. I found really your viewer one day was talking about Yemen, that they want now to bring the picture Yemen is a Shia. Yes, Yemen now is a Shia.
So Amal, that's a long list, a long history, and I agree with 100% what you're saying. What do you think should be done about Saudi Arabia? What, how should they be punished for killing Yemeni children?
I am the caller. Give my time. I'm the caller. You
putting me in my place, aren't you, Amal?
You have to know it. They have to know it about. Because if you do not know it in your own history, and this is an Arab problem, because I'm Arab. We as the Arab, you ask the question, how can we banish Saudi Arabia? Let me tell you, because there is a point what always hurts. When the immigrant or the Arab people who are speaking fluent Arab and they are Arab nation and they are in the Arab Congress and they are in the Arab theater there, they go to work, either they are the Syrians, either they are Egyptians, either they are Sudanese, either they are Eritreans. How did they treat the people of Saudi Arabia? So Saudi Arabia is not only the country or the king. I am talking about all the Saudi people.
Okay. Thank you, Amal. Thanks for your call. I don't want to be rude and cut you off. I know you are you made a very heartfelt point there, at a very emotional point. And I actually agree 100% with what you're saying. And I'm not cutting you off because I disagree with you or because I'm being rude. I'm cutting you off because we have lots of callers waiting on the line. Maysoon, who's a regular caller. Hi, Maysoon. Thanks a lot for calling in. You'd like to talk about UK politics, I believe, Maysoon.
Yes,
go ahead, please.
Yes, salaam alaikum.
Alaikum salaam, Maysoon.
I just want to say that, Amal, I hear you and I know what you're talking about. And we should stop going to Arabia for Hajj. Take away the money from them.
Boycotting
anyway,
Hajj.
The British elections. I think it's time people in this country realise, and again, this is my opinion and it is not conspiracy theory, people have to realise that there is no democracy in the West. There is no democracy in the United Kingdom. Elections are all fixed. The people who get elected have already been pre-selected, pre-chosen, pre-programmed, pre-mentored, and it's time that the British people realise this. These people are chosen from particular bloodlines. And
so you wouldn't vote, Mason, at all? You wouldn't. There's no point in voting.
I am not going to vote this time. I voted last time, and it was a waste of my time. I voted for Nick Clegg, and he turned round and stabbed everybody in the
back. That was a mistake, wasn't it?
I am not going to vote for anybody anymore because there isn't one candidate that stands for me with integrity and honesty, not one. As soon as they get into office, they all renege on their principles and their policies. And it's also time that people realised that the British government is run by a shadow government. It is not run by the people that we elect. It is run by a shadow government. Go and look up Common Purpose, for instance.
What about spoiling realize, the... Maysoon, just really interrupt you for a second. What about kind of registering your protest by kind of spoiling the ballot or something like that?
Roshan, I've done all that, you know. They like to throw in, alternative people, like, for instance, you know, George Galloway with his Respect Party, just to give everybody the illusion that, we have a choice. We do not have a choice. And look what they did to the SNP in Scotland. The Scottish people know that their elections were rigged. They know this for a fact. SNP.
But isn't the SNP a bit of a bright spark on an otherwise dull, boring campaign?
Pardon?
Just really quickly, Mason, because we've got other callers on the line.
Yes.
The SNP, isn't it a bit of a bright spark in the election campaign?
Well, I wanted Scotland to have their independence, and I knew that they wouldn't get in because, as I have. I'm trying to say to you, the elections are all rigged.
Yeah.
They are all rigged and we are run by a shadow government.
Thank you very much, Maysoon. I mean, what I would say is that whenever there's an election anywhere in the world, the British insist on sending international monitors and international observers to verify the validity and the legitimacy of the elections. There ain't no international monitors in this country, you know, monitoring these elections. I think we should have monitors from China and Iran monitoring the British elections to see whether they're free or fair. Mo is in the UK. How should Saudi Arabia be punished for killing Yemeni children? That's the question that Mo would like to address. Go ahead, Mo.
Hi, Mr. Saleh.
Hello.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We should stop blaming the United States and Israel, because if it wasn't for Saudi Arabia, these two countries would not be able to interfere in the region. The reason Israel gets away with murdering Palestinians is because Saudi Arabia allows it. Saudi Arabia is now fighting on three fronts, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. Saudi Arabia has been instrumental, as like one of your callers said, in Libya, in Somalia, in Eritrea, and all sorts of other places. Now, the troops serving in Saudi forces, as he called it, from Pakistan, the middle-ranking, low-ranking, and foot soldiers are all Pakistani. The reason they haven't invaded Yemen is because the Pakistanis have refused their soldiers, their troops, to enter Yemen, which is a fantastic thing that Pakistan has done.
Okay.
The Saudi monarchy is a false monarchy and needs to be removed, and people need to rise and remove that false monarchy now.
Mo, it's a fantastic call. You're making fantastic points. I'm only cutting you short because I want to go to a last caller. Niazi is in the US and would also like to talk about Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Go ahead, Niazi.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum salam.
First of all, brother, I'm very shocked because it's God House, from God House, something to coming to help people, not hurt people. They kill innocent kids, innocent women, innocent people, because why? They Shia. Who's Shia? They respect for Ali. Ali is not the God bad, the God bad is not as a Buddhist. Hazrat Ali Karmalaju is the one is very close with the Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This is an old crime. I calling for all attorney. Everywhere, Arab attorney, please, please, brother, because of your sister, because of your children, because of your mother, should be together.
Okay.
This is war crime. This guy is devil.
Okay, Niazi, I'm going to cut you short because we come to the end of the show. Very heartfelt call there from the US to end. Agree with what you're saying. They are committing atrocities there, and they need to be held to account. Great calls tonight. That's all for now, though, unfortunately. Don't forget to continue the discussion on Twitter and get other people talking about the questions that I've been asking you. And next week, please don't forget to tune in to Press TV for our live election program, The Road to Westminster 2015. That's next week on Thursday, the 7th of May, starting at 18:33 GMT. For UK viewers, that's 7:33 p.m. Amina Taylor will look at how the UK is voting in what is the most unpredictable election that Britain has seen in decades. We're also looking for you to join Amina in the studio. So if you live in London and you've got what it takes, contact us now using the details behind me. You can send us a tweet or like our page on Facebook and then send us a message and we'll get back to you. I'll be back here on Comment live at the same time next week to take all your calls on the British elections and the latest international developments. Stay tuned to Press TV for the news. Bye-bye.
Hello, if you just comment your name and the face of your contact number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
Zero. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect me to your phone number and then we'll be back.
Can I have your telephone number? Okay, so what's your name?